everyone. This is episode 55 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, discussing the recent episode of Teen Wolf, season 3, episode 20, Echo House. Karen and I are joined this week by Jen Lamoureux, who's another guest of ours from Hyperbole, who's on podcast with the both of us. So hello, Karen, and hello, Jen.
Hi.
Hello.
How is everyone this evening?
Cold.
Yeah, it's really cold where Karen and I are. Even though we're in different places, it's still really cold.
Is it? Yeah, you're not too far apart, are you?
No, we're not. And there's another polar vortex like over the top of us, so it's
a little
chilly.
Kidding.
It sounds like a joke, like a polar, like what even is that? Like it sounds like
it's a lot of really cold air. Like, it's freezing here.
It sounds really overdramatic. I believe that it's cold, but like, who was like, yeah, we're going to call it a polar vortex, so it sounds like the apocalypse. Like, okay.
The weathermen needed to keep their jobs.
Yeah. So, polar vortexes aside, Jen, do you want to tell the fine people who tune into our show what you do on Hyperbole, in case they haven't heard you as a guest on this show or on one of the other shows before?
Sure. I run the book section on Hypeable, and I am on the Who Hype podcast. I run Book Hype, and Karen joins me on that, and I'm also run the Once Upon a Time podcast.
Cool.
So I have lots of different things that I do.
Yay. Jen knows all books. You know all books, Jen knows them. I went shopping with Jen and Laura in New York when I was there a couple of years ago, and we just went into a bookshop, Books of Wonder, which is like a big children's bookshop in New York. But they were just like, here, buy this and buy this, and I know this author, buy this, and I think I bought like five books. They were just like, yeah, get this. So they're good people to know. Our Twitter, if you want to reach us, is NATW Podcast after the episode. Our Tumblr, as usual, is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can reach us on our email, natwpodcast@gmail.com, or if you want to go over to the Hyperbole comments section for this podcast, you can also chat with us there. If you'd like to reach Jen, she's also available on the internet. What was your Twitter handle that you use for such things?
You can reach me at Book Hype or at JenLam26 is my personal Twitter handle, which everyone, like all my Hypeable stuff goes out through that too. So yeah. I am reachable there.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining us, and hopefully you don't freeze before the end of the show.
Yes.
So Echo House, which aired on Monday night, we'll go straight in with it, I guess, into the quotes section from this episode. And I'm going to sort of start this off by actually, before we get into it, mentioning the fact that Melissa Ponzio, who plays Melissa McCall on the show, left a tweet last night saying something along the lines of how amazing this episode was and how Geoff Davis managed to hide something in plain sight in this episode. So some big thing about this episode was a massive clue that perhaps things aren't as they should be, as if we didn't already know that. But apparently something is not right. Something is a big clue hidden in plain sight. And that is going to literally colour every single thing I think about this episode. I have theories on how every scene is not what it is. But the biggest one for me actually ties into my quote, which was Oliver, the patient that Stiles rooms with in the Icon House institution, they're sort of walking and Stiles says he wants to get out of this nut house. And Oliver says, that's not really the appropriate way to describe a facility like this. And the reason I picked this quote is because it was the only mention of Icon House whatsoever that made sense to me in terms of the way medical things have been treated on the show so far. Like, the fact that he said that was like, yeah, actually, good point. Like, that is the kind of sensitivity that such subjects are usually treated with on Teen Wolf. Everything else about Icon House was completely like wrong and like 1950s and barbaric, and it made me think that the entire experience was like something in Stiles's head, like that it wasn't real in some way, because there's so much about Icon House that was just it just didn't fit with the kind of thing that is usually true for Teen Wolf. They're usually very good at showing things. You know, what we've seen with the hospital is pretty accurate, but everything about Icon House was weird to me. Like, it's not really how mental facilities are run these days. Number one, they're very rare. Like, you wouldn't really see ones that have mixed under 18 and adults. There are ones specifically for mental health wards, specifically for adults and for children. You wouldn't have someone room with someone who had to be restrained. You wouldn't have that happen. You wouldn't have tiled walls in a solitary confinement cell. Like, just everything about it, like, was not really factually accurate for a mental health facility in 2014. And I understand that they wanted to make it creepy as hell, but compared to how the show usually does things, it makes me wonder if it was, like, something was not real, if you know what I mean. So that line of Oliver's kind of hammered at home to me, in that it's that statement is the kind of one I would expect from Teen Wolf, whereas everything else about Icon House raised a lot of questions for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are a couple things that I want to point out when we get into our discussion, because it was just kind of like, is this really realistic? Is this what would happen? And I don't think that it is. So it makes me wonder if it's just a mistake on their part, which, you know, I mean, you can't always get everything 100% accurate if you have a different job to do altogether. I mean, this is not a show about mental institutions. It's just part of this specific plot line. But it did make me kind of question a few things. But my favorite quote came within the walls of Icon House as well, and this was between Stiles and Morel, when Morel's telling him about the pattern on his neck that he got from being injected by the lichen. And she says that, you know, this is significant and strange. And Stiles goes, by significant and strange, do you mean hopeful and optimistic? And I just really liked this for a lot of different reasons. For one, because it's kind of nice to see Stiles a little bit back to his former self and being kind of hopeful, even though you could tell he was really like, yeah, that's not what you meant, is it? Mm. But it was a funny moment from him, a funny line, and we haven't gotten that in a while, so it's just really nice. But at the same time, everything about him, even his humor right now, is so subdued. It's not the usual Stiles that we've, you know, had in seasons 1 and 2. And it just, even when he's being funny, it constantly reminds you what he's going through and what he's been through. And it's just, it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah, I was kind of like, it kind of took me a minute to realize. I'm like, oh, hang on, this is Stiles without the Nagitsune. He's actually himself right now, except that he's super, not dark in an evil way, but like dark, you know. It was in that same scene when he kind of like walks out and he's like, I've missed our talks, thanks for the illicit drugs. It's kind of like, yeah, it's a lot more weighty, like a lot more weighted than it was, you know, than his humor or whatever would be before. And yeah, he just, poor boy, poor little boy.
Yeah, it definitely felt that way. For Stiles, like, he's usually just like kind of the clown in there, but with smart humor, and it didn't even feel like that. It just felt like really sarcastic and dry, so
yeah.
I hope we get Stiles back soon. My quote comes from Scott, and it was kind of one of the more, like, lighter moments, I guess, of this episode, if you could even call it that. But it's when Scott says, give me the finger, and he's like, you know what I mean. Because it's just like Scott to kind of spit something out and be like, no, that's not that, yeah. That no.
It was so...
No, I just thought it was fun.
No, it was so good, because they didn't, like, pause. Like, they didn't actually make it a humorous moment. They kept the music going. They kept the tenseness of the scene. It wasn't, like, a cutaway. Like, they just put it in there and kept going, and it was very funny.
I think I liked it most because even Scott, like, rolled his eyes at himself, and he was like, God, did I really just say that?
Exactly.
I kind of miss this Scott, the one that, you know, doesn't always keep up with everybody else. Not, you know, he's not dumb or anything, but sometimes he just falls a little behind, and we haven't seen that in a while either, and it's kind of nice to get a little bit of the old characters back in the middle of all this darkness.
There was so much kind of humor with that kind of thing with the twins this episode. I wasn't kind of expecting that. Apparently they're in the team now, but I love how all of them are just like, you're idiots. Like, every time they made a suggestion, like, no, you just shut up and do the heavy work. Don't contribute.
It was good. But starting off the episode, and speaking of Eichenhaus, which obviously plays a significant role in this episode, we get Stiles checking himself into the mental institution. And he and his father don't tell Scott about it, but Scott comes anyway. He finds out somehow. And Scott doesn't want him to go in there, but Stiles says that it was his choice. And if they can't get the Nagitsune out of him, Scott needs to make sure that Stiles never leaves the institution. And I just thought that was really interesting and kind of an interesting moment between the two friends who I'm sure share everything. And yet Stiles kind of knew how Scott was going to react and decided to keep it as a secret from him.
Yeah, I was, you know, struck straight away by the fact that I've seen a lot of people in the last week or so being like, you know, Sheriff and Melissa don't know about the Nagitsune. They just think he might actually be getting this brain disease. And now it seems like the sheriff does know. Like, he says, Scott's being like, you don't know everything. And he's like, I know enough, but he's still not convinced that the brain disease isn't happening, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of another example of how he has been since he's known about the supernatural, be like, okay, I accept that there is this thing going on, but just because you say so doesn't mean it's like the be all and end all. And like, sometimes I'm going to go do a crime, you know, crime fighting in a normal way, or not just trust like someone's instincts because they're a werewolf or something. And it's, you know, it's interesting to me, obviously, if you'd been in that circumstance, like with Claudia, the mother, it would raise the alarm. But yeah, it was just interesting to him, to me, that he knew but didn't really seem to grasp kind of how bad that could potentially be. I was also a bit confused by sort of the timing. Like, you know, Stiles said it's only for 72 hours. Did he mean he was going to be in there while his dad went down to speak to a specialist? Like, why was he only going in there for 72 hours?
In like the mental health world, because it's kind of where I like legitimately work as my day job, there are 72 hour holds on people. So once they're placed into a facility for a 72 hour hold, they're there for 72 hours regardless. So even if they're 18, if they're placed for a 72 hour hold, they couldn't check themselves out.
Okay.
So that's why I'm assuming.
So he's
that's
saying
why
if I want to leave, I get to leave. So he's saying like it's okay. Like if I want to leave, I get to leave after 72 hours.
Right. That's kind of the implication of a 72-hour hold, is that it's for observation for 72 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what the whole situation was with why he said it was for such a short time, because again, when they went in, she was like, the first 72 hours is la di la di la, and I was like, I don't really understand if this is meant to be a permanent thing or not. But yeah, how do we think Scott knew about it if he didn't, you know, if they didn't tell him?
See, part of me thinks that this is all some sort of dream or trickery by the Nagitsune. I'm not, and there are lots of reasons why, but there's just so many things that felt really, like, jagged
and
in
not
this
explained.
Episode, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot
they
of
they were just
it...
kind of, here's a shot, here's a shot, here's a shot, and they don't really flow like a normal episode would, so it felt a little surreal in that respect.
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, well, that's just why I think it's not exactly what it seems because of that.
Yeah, a lot of it felt like, to me, like the projections of Stiles imagining a scenario, if you know what I mean. Like, that
yeah,
doesn't
no,
necessarily
I do.
Have to make sense. You know, like, oh, there's a weird sidekick. You know, oh, there's a girl. And, you know, people that he knows, people that he doesn't know, things being the idea of kind of a horror story version. And I do sort of have a theory on this one. We'll get a bit closer to the end, because I feel like he might have really been in Eichenhaus, but maybe experiencing what it was like at a different time or something, like back in like the 50s or something, if it ties into Nagitsune sort of information they end up finding at the end. But there's so many ideas, like there's so many reasons why it just seemed not solid reality. I don't know. Like, we don't know why Scott was there. It seemed like, it just seems like the kind of thing Scott Stiles would potentially, you know, imagine, or like in a movie something happens and it's not explained. And obviously this is TV, but it does not seem to make a lot of sense.
No. I think the thing that I found the weirdest in this first, like, opening shot was, or the scene was when Sheriff Zelinsky was like, no, you can't do this. No, you don't have your pillow. And he, like, had that freak out about the pillow. There was something about that that felt really surreal and not quite right.
Yeah.
I don't know why. There was just something about that that kind of was like, wait a minute, what are we watching? Like, what is this right now?
Yeah.
It didn't feel real.
Half of me is like, you know, he was just sort of having a panic attack because he didn't want his son to be let go and all of this. But the other half was like, I don't know, they brought up that pillow a lot and I have no idea.
Well, I just think that everyone, including the sheriff, like everyone he met in there, acted like a projection of Styles, like an aspect of Styles. Like, you know, and that panic attack of the sheriff, while yes, he could be in a very emotional situation, but that could be one part of Styles's mind reacting like that, and then the sort of part that's almost like that, the calm part is like a medicated part or something like that, like, you know, and that's sort of the over, you know, and the Styles that he thinks he is sort of controlling or calming the sheriff or controlling all of the other parts, because a lot of the, I mean, we've got to get into it, but there's so much stuff that has like weird turnarounds that aren't explained, and yeah, I find that very strange.
Yeah, something that I think really stuck out to me right from the beginning was when that patient committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I feel like why wasn't anybody around? Why did nobody see him?
Yeah.
It was just really weird. And even how everyone acted afterwards, like, it's no big deal. I mean, these are mentally unstable people, and yet you're kind of just brushing the whole thing off. It was very strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying riddles as well, like the Nogitsune riddles. Like, I don't know what, and I was just like,
did you guys notice that what he hung himself with looked like what the Nogitsune has wrapped around his head?
Yeah, like plaited.
So
bandages.
It looks like the bandages and stuff. So that's why I was like, I don't know. It just seemed really odd.
I think he was definitely being influenced by the Nogitsune because he was saying the riddle about the bird and the water and the shadow and all of that. But and at first I didn't think it was real. Like, I thought Styles was just seeing it in his mind. But then the worker he was with freaked out too. And I was like, oh, this is real. Okay, what does that mean?
But how did no one else notice? And I think we're going to literally have this for every sentence. Like, it's because it was so weird. And, I mean, she takes him to his room. And like I said, I don't know about every place. And I'm sure there's a lot of places where there are less than ideal treatment. But I don't think that I've ever seen any kind of hospital, you know, or mental facility where they would put a mobile sort of patient in a room with someone who was restrained, either for the safety of the restrained person because they don't know what the mobile person will do, or because the restrained person is crazy enough to be restrained and the mobile person, like, that's not a thing, I'm pretty sure. Like, that's like the fact they put him in that room with Oliver seems very, very odd to me as well. I don't know.
They would never have roommates, ever.
Yeah.
In a place, no. And when you walk into the place, you wouldn't have people behind cell doors. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything about that is unrealistic, which, like you said earlier, is odd. So.
Yeah.
But super creepy, very effective in the creep department.
Yeah, like the old school, like burning lamp. It almost looked like little lamps coming out of the wall. Like, the sconces that were coming out of the wall, those were super creepy and very old school. And, everything about that place was horrifically creepy. It definitely served a purpose.
Yeah, like, I understand if the building was old and they kept it on as a hospital, but they, especially for young people, they tend to go out of their way to make places like that comfortable and light and not oppressive and creepy in order to actually help people. So I don't know, it was everything about the way they treated them, I'm like, if this is what the show's realistically trying to portray as like a mental facility, then I'm a bit confused compared to how well they portray other things like the, you know, schools and hospitals and stuff. So I feel like it is something wrong on purpose.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to, like, keep this in the back of our heads and try to figure out, like, clues going forward if any of this stuff is going to kind of relate back to it.
Yeah.
But switching gears for a minute, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't realize that Deaton and Chris Argent were working together to get the Lotharia Vulpina and go to Japan and all of that. Did that seem like... Oh, that kind of, like, blindsided me, and it was sort of weird, and it makes me wonder what kind of relationship emissaries and hunters usually have with each other, because you'd think they would sort of be on opposing sides.
Well, in the past, these two kind of were, weren't they? Didn't they have, like, disagreements and stuff?
Right,
in the
season two with the Jackson thing, yeah.
Yeah, so it is a bit odd, but at the same time, you also wonder how Deaton would know to go and find it there. Argent hadn't told him.
That was my thing in the previous episode. I'm like, how does Deaton know all this stuff? How does he know the same guy that was the Nagitsune as Chris did, and how did he get in there? And it does make sense that him and Argent were, you know, that he was working under Argent's guidance in terms of where to go, but I totally didn't pick up on that. I don't know if you're meant to pick up on that, but...
I hope not, because I missed it.
Yeah, that was not clear to me at all until they were like... Made sense, but it was not clear to me in the previous episode.
Yeah, but they're all trying to find a scroll, which is basically going to figure out how to get the Nagitsune out of Styles. And this really stuck out to me because Allison's the one where she says she thinks she knows where it could be. Do you think it's realistic that she would have figured that out, that she would have put two and two together? Because I just think she's super shady, so I'm kind of biased right now.
There's something else later in the episode that, again, I'm like, is this the thing hiding in plain sight? Because I was, there's something else that happens that with regards to Allison. With Allison and Silverfinger, I don't know, it's... I didn't find it that much of a stretch to believe that she would sort of figure that out, given that they knew how he was about the Silver Finger, if you know what I mean. They kind of knew that it was a thing, but again, in the real world, I don't know how quickly I'd jump to that conclusion either. Like, it totally makes sense, but it is kind of weird that she made that assumption very quickly. I don't know. It's... As I said, there's something later in the episode that made me very about Allison, but we'll see.
Jen, how do you feel about Allison so far? Because I think you're a little bit more removed from, like, the fandom and all the theories that are going around than the two of us. So I'd be a little bit interested to know your vibes on her right now.
Well, I thought it was a bit odd that she quickly was like, oh, I know where it is. And, like, her whole demeanor in this episode seemed kind of weird. I definitely got a weird vibe from her, and just how she kind of was like, oh, I know, and this is the plan, and just the way she handled herself didn't feel quite right. So I definitely thought it was a stretch for her to jump to, like, oh, I know exactly where it is, and let's go do this, this is our plan, and it just seems really weird. So I'm more with you, Karen, on the fact that it seemed like kind of a big stretch for her to just come up with it, and there seems to be something off about her. She doesn't seem quite the same as she did before. She almost seems less caring. Like, she reverted to the Allison after her mom died, in some respects.
That's true. She was a little bit, like, more forceful this episode, where she's like, oh, yeah, this is the plan. We have to do this. We don't have any other choice. And
yeah.
So I think that's interesting. I'm just keeping my eye on her for now. But we get... two more characters in this episode, Oliver and Meredith, and I kind of wanted to get how you guys felt about them, like your first impressions, and do you think we're going to see more of Meredith, because her part was pretty small?
My thoughts, basically, the first time I watched the episode, I mean, actually, to give full credit, the first time I watched the episode, my computer sort of screwed up in the middle, so I had to watch it in two halves, so it was a bit disjointed. The first time, I didn't pay that much attention to Meredith, even though I remembered that she was someone who had sort of, her casting had been announced, if you know what I mean. It was significant in some way. And Oliver, I was kind of like, oh, and you know, his whole plot unwound as it did. And I was like, okay, that makes sense, I guess, but I didn't make much of it. The second time, I was like, okay, both of you are super fishy. Because as soon as we meet Oliver, he's like coughing, and he says, you know, I just swallowed a bug. And Styles goes, that's disgusting, Oliver. Every single time there's been a weird throwaway thing involving Styles, like with the flowers, and there was something else, I can't remember the other episode, that I was like, yeah, that's a thing. It's been not throwaway, and I feel like the bug thing is potentially a thing that happens to you when you are being used as the tool of the Nagitsune in the same way Barrow was, if you know what I mean, when Barrow was
right, eventually he had the flies full inside of flies, of him.
And then Oliver keeps coughing throughout the episode, like that was continuing. So I'm like, is that the thing hidden in plain sight, like the bug thing? And that made me a bit suspicious. And then Meredith, on the second go, so I saw, you know, something that had been going around the fandom, and it just makes a lot more sense that maybe she is the new Banshee that's going to be introduced to us. And, I mean, that would make sense, her being in a mental facility if she didn't have anyone in her life who really understood what was going on with her, and people just thought she was hearing voices in a sort of unstable way. And then what she says on the phone, with the idea that she is the Banshee, what she says on the phone, whoever she's talking to, I don't know, but it makes total sense. Like, if she's talking to a ghost or whatever it is that she's doing, and she's saying, I think I need to tell them the whole story, I think they need to know, they potentially being, like, the group of supernatural people trying to protect Beacon Hills, and then her saying, one of them standing right behind me, is in referring to Styles. It made complete sense if that is the situation, so I'm kind of on board with that train right now.
Yeah, Brooke brought that up to me, and she was like, she's hearing voices like Lydia does, and I'm like, oh, that makes so much more sense now. I really didn't think at first that she was the Banshee. I had no idea who she could be, and I mean, you know, we don't know, but I think that's a pretty solid theory. And I just really hope that we see more of her, because compared to Oliver, we only got a few seconds of Meredith. Yeah. And so I feel like for them to cast somebody and to have, like, you know, spoilers sent out about who this character is and what her role in the show could be, to have just those few seconds seems a little bit strange to me. But in terms of Oliver, I really liked him. I mean, in the end, he goes crazy. But up until that point, I thought he was kind of funny, and he was cute. And you kind of just kind of laughed with him a little bit. And he was an interesting character.
Yeah, I liked him as well. And, you know, until he went crazy. It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
They always seem so harmless until they're not, and they have a drill in their hands, you know?
Exactly. I mean,
give them a power tool and it's all over.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, looking kind of harmless at first, we see Malia in there as well, and she kind of looks at Styles, like he reintroduces himself, and she kind of looks a little put off, and then she just kind of winds up and punches him in the face, and it was kind of a funny moment, but at the same time, like, you kind of have to wonder what she's going through, and we'll get into that a little bit more later, but my main question here is, why do you think Malia is in Eichen House in the first place? Because we don't actually know. We never find out in this episode.
Yeah.
And why is she allowed to walk out the door so easily?
Oh, yeah.
So, it's something, yeah. I don't know, Malia to me is like all sorts of wrong. There's nothing right about her, especially at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is like what it seems with that girl. There's something. I don't know what.
No, I know. It was so weird. I was like, okay, on one level, if she's like a girl that's been like missing in the woods for 8 years, then yeah, I can understand how she might be like super unstable. However, she doesn't actually seem that unstable in terms of when real children go missing and are like raised outside society, they don't know how to function or even really how to speak or like deal with interaction, you know. and she's just chill. Like, she's fine. And I understand how, like, you know, doctors would be like, okay, she needs some mental health assessment, you know, if she's been in that situation. But I don't think that they'd, like, just put her in there, especially if her dad was, like, so keen to get her back. You know, what had she been doing that ended up with her in there? And it just makes no sense. The fact that it's not even asked, like, oh, yeah, she's there, no questions asked, is, again, another idea that Styles is just sort of filling this space where he is with these projections of things that have happened. And it just makes no sense that she's there and that she's so, like, normal teenager, you know, that she's acting the way the normal 16, 17-year-old girl would, as opposed to acting how, like, a 10-year-old would or something, given that she was allegedly alone in a small patch of woods for 10 years or 8 years. It's really weird. And, I mean, her whole coyote thing, I mean, I am of the opinion that I very much doubt that she spent the entire 8 years as a coyote at all times, like, in the way that Styles seems to be under the impression that she was, like, that she's now stuck as human and can't shift back. I think that that is a lie, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's definitely more evidence of that later in the episode that I definitely want to pick apart, because it's kind of weird what's going on right now. But Morel also shows up in this scene. Did you guys like seeing her back?
Not really. I'm gonna be honest. I mean, at first I was like, what is she doing there with no explanation? What does she have control? And then she's, like, leading the group therapy, and I'm like, I guess if you're a therapist, you go around to different institutions, schools and stuff, and do, you know, the helping or whatever, but does seem a bit convenient.
I was going to say, it's super convenient that she's there and that she stumbles upon Styles right after he gets punched by Malia. And, like, it just, it's way too convenient.
I also thought it was very convenient that he got punched and fell directly onto that grate and saw the basement.
Yeah.
Like,
And Morel knew to ask him, oh, you saw something?
Yeah.
Well, how would she know that? What? There's no basis for him to be able to see things like that previously, right?
I feel like we watch Teen Wolf every week and that we're not always asking these, oh, that seems convenient, that seems illogical. So I feel like the amount of that was going on in this episode, like, either they've, like, dropped down in quality by about 70% since we started watching the show, which I don't think is accurate, or that this is all doesn't make sense on purpose, if you know what I mean.
I vote for on purpose. Like, yeah. I think it's very, very intentional. For what the end game is, I'm not sure, but I think it's very intentional.
Yeah.
I was pretty glad to see Morel show up, actually. I didn't really think about those things that you guys were thinking of. Just the fact that she was there made sense to me, but I can see now, like, how convenient some of the circumstances were. But aside from that, I mean, I've never really trusted Morel, but I think she's a really interesting character, because even though Deaton is also an emissary, he seems to be a little bit more about right and wrong, black and white, whereas Morel is very gray, and she's got this one purpose, and that purpose is maintaining the balance. And she does not care if she has to kill this, you know, 17-year-old boy, if it means that she's going to be maintaining the balance. So even though I don't trust her, I think she makes for kind of an interesting addition to the plot lines that were going on in this episode. But in the next scene, we get Derek and Chris in jail, and which I loved, you know, our little buddy cop duo here. It was really great. But the thing that really stuck out to me here was that Chris starts talking about berserkers, which are basically people who use animal skins in rituals, and they sort of become the animal, and they get crazy, and the human side of them is consumed, and you have to kill them because they'll just literally tear people apart.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, you know, is this another hint at what could exist in the Teen Wolf world?
Yeah.
And I always love getting those sly little pieces and clues, because we really don't know what else exists in Teen Wolf other than werewolves, werecoyotes, Kanama, and, you know, the Japanese mythology this season, but I want to know how far they're going to go and possibly what we could be getting next.
I found two things about this scene interesting. Number one, that they're sort of sitting there back to back in their respective cells and chatting, and they were talking about Styles and what happened and Jackson, and both of them, I can't remember who says it first and who says it second, but, you know, Chris or Derek was like, oh, yeah, we got lucky before, and then the other one was like, yeah, but we didn't know that Jackson was blah, blah, blah. And it's just interesting because it's not like they were working together on that, but it's like they kind of have acknowledged that they were always both on the same side. Like, the fact that they're saying we like that, I don't know, it really stuck out to me for some reason. And the second thing I enjoyed in regard to the berserkers was Chris asks Derek about it, and Derek reels it off like he has the the book knowledge, if you know what I mean, like that he knows the actual legends mythology, and it just ties into our like Derek Hale 87 college degrees, you know, European mythology major, like that he has all of this theoretical information but not actually much practical use. And I love that. That's like, is he the Hermione to Chris Argent's Harry? It's like, you know, I've read about it in Hogwarts of History. So,
yeah. Deacon Hill's a history.
So that's kind of what Derek, whenever he reels off like this, you know, when you think about it, he's been doing it since season one. Like, he's like, oh, I've heard about this thing. He must read so much. And I think they've even pointed out that there's some background shots when he's, like, sitting around in his apartment or when he's waiting in Scott's room or Styles' room. He actually is always picking up a book and reading and looking through it, like, when he's waiting for stuff. So I love Derek Hale, book nerd. I love it so much.
I hadn't actually thought about that. That's pretty funny.
I don't know, man.
Well, you know, going back to Morel really quickly, because she talks about the Lichtenberg figure, which is on Styles from being injected by the lichen. And she basically says when it's all the way gone, the Negitsune will be back to full power and he will be possessed again. And Morel gives him pills to stay awake, saying that he's vulnerable when he's asleep. But she also says, you know, if they don't figure it out before your time is up, I'm going to inject you with this thing and it's going to kill you. And so, you know, she does this in order to maintain the balance. And my question is, do you think she has any remorse? Do you think she ever feels guilty about what she has to do?
No. I think she sees it as her job, her responsibility. It's what she's bred for.
Yeah.
You know?
That's my feeling, too, because she never really, you never really see any of that on her face. She always sort of has this, like, superiority complex with, you know, this is what you have to do, or I don't know the answer to this, like, go figure it out for yourself. She's not extremely helpful. So, okay, she's definitely Deaton's sister, then.
Yeah, they specialize in being professionally unhelpful.
Do you guys know what Lichtenberg figures are?
They're something they're when you're struck by lightning, I think,
right,
is what Morel said.
They're about electrical, they look like electrical discharges, which is interesting given what Kira can do, if you think about it.
Yeah.
That connection between her and what's on Styles from that lichen that they used.
Could this be the clue that's in our front of our faces? Maybe
because
Kira the whole time.
Because I'm looking at it, and it also says something about, they're called electrical trees. Like, within insulated material, they're called electrical trees, the way they branch out and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of an interesting thought, if that's what they're called. You know, because it comes from high-voltage equipment. Kira is made of high-voltage, basically. Just saying.
That's definitely something to think about.
Like, it more made me think that it wasn't that the lichen caused it, but it was that, like, the lichen lit it up and that the mark was already inside him from when she zapped him and made him the Negitsune, if you know what I mean.
Hmm.
It's like, for example, if you run, like, a coloured dye through your veins, don't try it at home, and then you can see them, but they're always there. So it's like the scar thing was there internally, but that the lichen, lit it up because it was burning out the connection of the Nagitsune or whatever.
Oh, okay. That does kind of make sense. Like, that could be a result of where the Nagitsune, like, entered styles or something.
Yeah.
Okay. That could make sense. I'm on board with that. But speaking of styles, he wants to get into the basement, and he strikes up a deal with Malia, who we find out actually wants to be a coyote again. Did you guys think this was weird at all? I mean, it sort of makes sense to me because she's been that way for so long. And, you know, she's always cold because she doesn't have her fur coat anymore. But I can't imagine. I mean, she's lived, I'd say, half of her life as a human and half of it as a coyote, if we're going with what she says is true and that, you know, she's been a coyote that whole time. You really think she would want to return to that form?
Something about that whole scene was really suspicious, primarily because she's conveniently in the men's shower naked. And, oh, look, Styles comes. What's the best way to get a teenage boy's attention? Be a naked girl. He'll do whatever you want. Do you know, like, there was something about that that seemed so contrived and so purposeful for her. Like, because she, even if you watch her, she, like, faces him and takes a very long time to pull up her towel to make sure he kind of catches a glimpse.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, it felt really intentional on her part. And that was one of the things that made me stop and be like, oh, wait a minute. There's information she wants from him. And if she does X, Y, and Z and kind of manipulates him into thinking they're on the same team, then she'll be able to get what she wants. Like, I felt like there was something very suspect about everything she did. And again, there's something at the end that made me even more curious. But when we get to that, I'll talk about it. But there's just something about her throughout this whole sequence that it's all about her gaining information and her basically leading Styles to the Nagitsune. Like, it's just so weird.
Yeah, that's true. She basically did lead him right there.
I don't know. Well, yeah, it's not great. It's she doesn't seem, she seems way too savvy. And as I said, if she was really, you know, a 17-year-old girl who'd been a coyote for 8 years and not really dealt with people, she'd be a lot more, like, not that good at being around people and certainly not that good at, like, being touched and stuff. So, yeah.
But this next scene is actually one of my favorites. Not only, and it's the one where Scott, Allison, Lydia, and the twins are trying to figure out how they're going to attack the armored car to get Katashi's silver finger because they think the scroll is inside of it. And I just really liked Lydia in this scene. I mean, she didn't have like a gigantic role, but, you know, just her dialogue and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the subtle things she did, I really enjoyed. But also, it just really shows us the fundamental difference between the twins, especially Aiden, and the rest of the group, when he's just like, and then we're going to attack them. And they're like, no, be quiet. It was a really kind of light moment in the middle of a lot of very creepy moments.
Yes, agreed. I mean, we sort of mentioned it in the quotes, but yeah, that whole team set up with the twins is kind of hysterical to me. Like, I like when she was like, wow, you are so out of our league. Like, it's
I actually didn't really understand that line. Like, what did she... I'm guessing that was sarcasm.
I think that she meant sarcasm in terms of, like, as in they're clearly quite far behind them in terms of the planning and the quickness. But yeah, I think it was sarcasm, but I highly enjoyed it.
And then Styles gets caught trying to go to the basement, and he goes to the quote-unquote quiet room where he gets sedated. And again, this was sort of like, is this realistic? And Nat, I know you were talking about before about how, like, it's all very 1950s sort of, like, dealing with mental health in the mental institution. And I don't know who that guy is. If somebody can tell me his, like, the actor's real name, he totally gave me the creeps. And I swear I recognize him, but I can't figure it out. And I would just really like to know who he is. But that guy, the head orderly, Brunsky, I think his name was very creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who the hell puts someone in a solitary confinement room with, like, tiled walls. I really don't think that that's a thing as well. And he was horrible, and, yeah, you don't sedate people against their will if they're not actually out of control, which Styles wasn't. It all was very shady. It was like, yeah, bad 1950s, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest kind of thing. So, yeah, again, it kind of added to the idea that this is not actually really happening. So, I don't know what to do. I'm very stressed.
Jen, what did you think about this part? Because I know you said, like, know about this stuff.
It was really odd. I didn't realize that the walls were tile. I thought they were padded.
Not tile.
So that would have been normal. Yeah, I guess I didn't look very closely. Yeah. So yeah, that is really odd. And then just the way it almost was like the orderly had it out for Styles on more than one occasion. So I felt like he kind of played into it as well, in a way. So, I mean, I don't know. It was weird, and it didn't quite play the way it should have, considering. Is there any way that orderly could somehow be, like, the old, what the Negitsu looked like before he became the Negitsu? Do you know what I mean? Like, is that even a possibility somehow? Because they seem to have that kind of angry element to him, and he wanted to, like, put Styles in his place. He wanted to make Styles sleep. You know what I mean? Like, there was that kind of evilness to him that was very targeted at Styles and not at other people.
Maybe the Negitsune was, like, not possessing, because I'm not really sure how all of that works, you know, being, like, literally wanting to be inside of Styles, but also still being able to, like, manipulate other people. I'm not really sure what's going on there, but, you know, maybe the Negitsune was manipulating literally everyone in that facility just to work against Styles. I don't know. We end a lot of our discussions with a lot of very stressed out sighs recently.
Well, at first, I thought that the hidden in plain sight clue was that this guy, because Oliver calls him Brunsky, but then when Malia mentions him, she kind of slurs his name. And as I said, the first time I watched it, the feed was very bad. And Malia kind of slows her name, and it sounds like she said Balinski, and I'm like, is this, like, another aspect of Styles? Is this, like, him having all of these projections and that's Balinski? But then they say Brunsky again later, but I got very... This is how on edge I was this episode, like, making up all of these things. It was so bad.
So, Kira is up next, and we find out that she knows how to wield a katana. She kind of just picks it up randomly, and I know some people are, like, not really down with this, but I don't really care. I think it's awesome. I love Kira, and I love this aspect of her where she sort of just has, like, all these abilities, and I think in the end they're kind of all gonna come together, but I thought it was awesome how she went over to Scott's house and was like, look, I can help you. Here's what I can do. You should let me come along. And Scott's just kind of like, okay, you can come.
He's so simple some days.
Some days, yeah. He's a smart guy, though. I mean, if you have a girl on your side who can do that with a sword, then you should let her come along.
And then there's the convenient whole electricity thing that she's got rocking. So, you know, that's not half bad.
Yeah, I was surprised that it was about the katana powers and not about the electricity powers. Like, I thought she was going to show him that she knew how to, like, zap people or something. And, you know, just having the katana powers come with the territory of being a kitsune then? Because it was not exactly what I was expecting, that she had, like, a, you know, supernatural ability with the sword.
Maybe. I mean, technically, I don't know how related this is, but technically the Oni are part of her mother. She's sacrificing her tails in order to create the Oni. So I kind of wonder if they just sort of have this, like, innate ability for some of these things, and it seems like it could possibly be connected.
Yeah.
I don't know. And we're supposed to be getting even more abilities coming up next week. So I think it's going to be interesting to find out, you know, what's next. If it's going to be more along the lines of her supernatural powers, like the electricity, or if it's going to be something else like this with the swordsmanship.
Yeah.
So in the next scene, we get Malia breaking Styles out of his room. He kind of, you know, comes out of his sedation. He's had another nightmare with the Negitsune, who says, you know, the same thing that the guy who hanged himself, was saying, where, you know, what can swim in the ocean and yet remain dry? The answer is a shadow. So it's the same sort of thing that was going on before between Styles and Negitsune. But Malia breaks Styles out and they go to the basement. And this part seems a little anticlimactic to me, actually, because she says there's another way to get to the basement. We have to go through the closed ward, which is the ward where all of the really violent patients are, and, you know, worst of the worst. And we didn't see any of that. I was really expecting some sort of, like, reveal, or, like, Barrow was going to be in there or something.
I mean, that's what I thought as well. In regards to Barrow, I mean, we don't really know if he's alive or dead. But I was wondering about that the whole time, in terms of, they said that this is where Barrow was. And do they mean, like, after he was arrested the first time, or before, and then he broke out? Because this is a regular institution. It's not a criminal facility. Like, there are mental criminal facilities. And if someone's, like, a mass murderer, you don't just stick them in, like, what's meant to be, like, a safe facility for actual patients. Not that he's not also a patient, but, you know, they don't just put the criminals in with the other people. And I found that really weird, that it's meant to have been he was committed there after he blew up the school bus. So there's that to start with. And unless he was there before he blew up the school bus and then they took him back because he was getting, you know, the treatment, the same treatment there or something. I don't even know. Also, Malia breaking out Styles, I don't know if it's just because you couldn't see it properly, but that door did not look forced to me. I know she said she broke the lock, but I was kind of, I paused it and looked at the door and the door jamb, and it didn't look like it had been forced, and it was kind of a bit weird that she'd be able to do that and no one would notice it happening. And so that was another thing that made me think that, you know, it was some part of Styles' dream of things just conveniently happening, in the same way that earlier Oliver also said, like, oh, if you want to get the keys, you'll have to trick him in some way. Like, that line delivery as well seemed really like all different aspects of Styles kind of playing on him. But we're going to look like such idiots when, like, it comes out that we're totally wrong about all of this. But, you know, what can you do?
Well, the thing that surprised me most about that scene for Malia was, how does she know how to get into the closed ward, first of all? If it's a closed ward, that place is on lockdown. Second of all, how does she know that there's another entrance? Does she have the blueprints to the place in her back pocket? Like, how does she have that information? And how does she navigate and get them there? It's almost like that scene cut from, well, she said it, so now we're here. Like, there's that Doctor Who episode where Donna's in, like, the virtual world, and yeah, she says it, and she just goes there.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of felt like for me. Sorry, I know I'm crossing fandoms all over the place. But, like, that's what it reminded me of, because she says it, and then they're there. That's why we don't see
and
the closed ward.
And that's what happens in dreams. Yeah.
Right. It's just really odd.
That's a good point, especially since, you know, Morel specifically said, don't fall asleep. You're more vulnerable when you fall asleep. And Malia was there to wake him up. And, like, that already kind of made me suspicious of her right there. It just seemed really convenient.
But maybe she never even really woke him up. Maybe it was all part of things that are in his head. So maybe he's been asleep the whole time. Maybe he's only been asleep part of the time. Like, it's just so questionable because of the way it's cut.
This is just a continuation of from episode one, where he just keeps waking up from different dreams. He's still in a dream since episode one.
Yeah.
That would kill me. That would break my brain.
I would believe it. I'd totally believe it.
The next scene was another favorite one of mine, actually, and this is when Chris meets his quote-unquote lawyer, but it's actually the leader of the other group of hunters, and they kind of talk about the fact that Chris broke the code, like he changed his code and she's really not cool with it. And they want to talk about Allison for some reason. But the thing that really stuck out to me was she calls him Mijo, which is Spanish for my son. And I was like, oh, is this, you know, are we supposed to think that this is Grandma Argent? And when I watched the episode for a second time, I was a little less sure about that. And, you know, because she says, like, your family, she speaks as if she's outside of the family, yet she still calls him Mijo, which is kind of an endearing term. It doesn't necessarily mean literally you're my son, but it also made me think, could this be Victoria's mom?
I definitely instantly thought it was his mother, and the whole your family thing being that she, like, that she detached herself from the Argents because Gerard was a crazy person and they split up. But her being Victoria's mother also does make sense. If, like, she's a hunter and she does take things quite seriously about werewolves, you know, she would obviously be kind of a bit pro-Victoria killing herself, I guess, which is kind of a weird thing to be. But, you know, Chris seems to be the only person really bothered about that. And, you know, I could believe it being Victoria's mother because Victoria was so hardcore. Like, she was much more hardcore than Chris in terms of being stern and ruthless. And we always assumed she had to come from, like, another hunting family because it's not that you just get inducted into that and then become a total psycho. So if this family is quite ruthless and then Victoria could have sort of grown up like that and then, you know, the mother would have understood why she killed herself, whereas Chris, who's a bit sort of softer, would have never been okay with it.
Is it possible she's, like, the leader of all the hunters? That's why she calls him Mijo?
Oh.
Could she be, like, the top tier of hunters?
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
And
the women are supposed to be the leaders, so
right.
For her to kind of hold that power above him would make sense.
Yeah. And the other thing is, she was with the men that had Derek and Peter, yes? Wasn't she one of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't she say she was looking for the girl? Didn't she continuously ask them about the girl?
Yeah, we thought that meant Cora originally, but we're not sure.
I don't know. There's just something about it that makes me think it's somehow connected to looking for Allison in some way. Do you know what I mean? Clearly Allison is not a wolf, but do they somehow have this, like, information that she could become one, or do they have information on Malia? Like, there's something very targeted about her visit at this time to him about everything else that's going on. It feels like it's very connected to either Malia or Allison.
Yeah.
Speaking of Malia, let's talk about the hot mess that's this next scene that has some people up in arms, which I think makes a lot of sense, but let's kind of pick it apart. Basically, Stiles and Malia are down in the basement looking through some stuff, and they don't find anything. And Malia is super cold, and, you know, Stiles is the gentleman, and he reaches over and holds her hands to try to warm her up, and they end up kissing. And supposedly it is Malia's first kiss, and Stiles is like, oh, let's do that again. And, you know, they continue, and I guess the big question is here, and Jen, I want your opinion on this first. Do you think we were meant to believe that Stiles and Malia had sex there?
I think we are. For lots of reasons, because for being so cold, she whipped off her shirt pretty quickly. I'm just making a note. But there's something about that scene that, again, it's a cutaway. It's very unclear like the other scenes, but I think that's the impression you're meant to get. Because when it cuts back after the passionate makeout that we see, and you're led to believe things have happened, it cuts back and she's fully clothed again. So it's a very weird cut again. Like it's not continuous. It doesn't connect to what we were left with the image before. The next image is different. They're cuddling. They're all in each other's arms, but they're both fully clothed. So while I think the initial intent is to make you believe that they did, I don't know, because of the way it cuts back and everything is this different scene. Like it's a weird cut.
Yeah, and it's weird, too, because Teen Wolf has never had a problem with showing a little bit of skin and, you know, getting down and dirty. We've seen it plenty of times. And for that to not happen here, and there are a lot of other reasons, I think, why people are like, you know what, I don't know if this really happened. And it was definitely my first impression that they had sex, but now that I'm seeing more theories floating around, and just the fact that, like, why would Malia do that if she had been a coyote for so long? Does this mean she hasn't been a coyote for that long? You know, could this really not be her first kiss and her first time? It's all very suspect. What did you think when you first saw it, Natalie?
I was, again, under the impression straight away that that's what you were meant to think, especially given that this season they were like, oh, Styles losing a status, whatever. And I think maybe, again, we've gone like, oh, do they mean human? Is he going to be a werewolf? Do they mean, like, sex? Do they mean what? We, you know, and I feel like this was some sort of red herring, maybe. Like, I don't know, because originally I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. But then I'm like, okay, this show is generally very good about sex, not just about, like, showing it, but, like, you know, even if they're not, like, every single time here, you know, we're having sex and, you know, here's Scott's condoms. Like, but it's, for example, you see, like, Aiden and Lydia hook up in the school and you don't necessarily assume, you know, oh, they're going to have sex, or oh, they're not going to have sex this very moment, or, like, her in bed with Jackson or Scott and Allison, whatever. Every time, it, you know, it seems like a pretty strong implication, and also, you know, it's in a scenario where you wouldn't expect it to, you wouldn't expect it to be sort of a problem in any way. It's not done in a stressful or negative way. Whereas this, like, there's, basically there's no way that it was, like, protected sex, if they did have sex, because Styles is wearing some track pants and got everything taken off him. It's not like one of them was randomly carrying a condom in the mental institution. And I just feel like that they wouldn't, like, show, like, unprotected mental institution sex without any consequences. Like, I feel like that's really weird for this show. And also, literally, who goes from, like, oh, I've been a coyote for 8 years, I'm clearly not emotionally stable because of this, that was just my first kiss, and yeah, I'm going to have sex with you now. Like, I feel like Styles wouldn't do that. Like, that he wouldn't necessarily go for that. I mean, if Malia seems sure of herself, then yeah, maybe he's a teenage boy or whatever, but it's, there's a few circumstances about it that make me think that's really strange. And I think maybe we're meant to think that they did, and it's meant to throw us all off this whole status clue, and that we're meant to think, oh, that was it, and then that's not what it was. It was the maybe a werewolf thing or something else that we don't know yet. So
yeah, I think with Styles, you know, basically he's not sure how long he's going to survive, because he knows that if he doesn't find an answer soon, he's going to get, you know, repossessed by the Negitsune, and there's going to be a lot of people coming after him, namely Morel with her lethal injection. So I can kind of see where he's like, well, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to die in a few days anyway. And I guess I would hope that he wouldn't have jumped at the opportunity like that, but I can also kind of see his reasoning there. But the other thing that I think we really need to talk about is how just weird and random it is to have sex on a couch in the basement of a mental institution when you're trying to figure out how to not get repossessed by this evil Japanese spirit.
That's what I thought. I was like, he just asked her to check the marks fading, and she was like, yeah, they're almost gone. And he was like, oh, that's bad. And then it's like, straight away, she distracts him until they're gone, if you know what I mean. She's like, oh, now we're going to do this. And then by the time, you know, they finish, it's gone. Like, you know, she totally, you know, if she tried to do it as a distraction from that so that the, you know, if she's working for the Negitsune or something, like, we don't know. But it did seem to me like, oh, that seems convenient again.
That's true. That's why I was so suspicious of Malia, because this whole sequence of events is just very weird. It seems very planful on her part and manipulated by her, in lots of different ways. So that's what, I don't know, there's just something about her that doesn't seem right in this sequence of events.
I definitely have to agree. That's going to be something we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on. I assume she's going to be in next week's episode. So we'll just have to keep an eye on her for that. But, you know, going back outside of Eichen House, we have Scott and his whole gang, his pack, show up to the armored truck, and they're going to try to get the Silverfinger so they can get that scroll. And Kincaid, that huge werewolf bodyguard, shows up, and there's, you know, some throwdown there, and Kincaid starts beating the crap out of everybody, but then the twins sort of come in and save the day, and they have some cool moves. And, you know, Scott decides, once Kincaid is on his knees, beaten, and Scott has the Silverfinger and the scroll in his hand, that, you know, he doesn't want the twins to kill him, even though the twins are like, we need to do this. He's just going to keep going after you. And Scott's like, you know what? No, we came here to save a life, not end one. And once again, I just love how classy Scott is. He's such a good alpha. And I know everybody was worried, and some people still aren't chill with him being an alpha. But, you know, he's already making like 10,000 more good decisions than Derek ever did. So I'm all for it.
Yay. Yay, Scott. Hang on. Yeah, no, Scott, the twins need to learn some lessons that you can't just kill people and get in your way.
Yeah.
If they're gonna stick around with Scott. Like, the fact that they've, like, lived like that for so long, being like, oh, yeah, if someone's going to be a problem in future, just kill them. And that's clearly not going to work out. But, I don't know, Kincaid seemed to have, I don't know, a modicum of respect for them by the end of it. Like, could he be, like, an ally, like, in the future? Like,
that's what I was kind of hoping for. I mean, he really scares the crap out of me, and I think that if he wanted to, he could probably get Scott alone and, you know, take his alpha powers, his alpha juice. But I think that he definitely, when at the end there, when he looked at Scott, there was some respect in his eyes, like, wow, he could have had them kill me, but he didn't. And maybe, you know, he's just going to go off in his merry way and keep doing what he's doing, but hopefully that kind of sticks in the back of his mind, and maybe Scott just made somebody else a better person.
Oh, let's hope so.
Like Jesus, werewolf Jesus.
Yes. So Malia post sexing on the couch.
Karen.
What? That's what they just did.
I know, but
Malia and Styles. Malia basically notices the wall, and she goes over and knocks on it, and it's hollow, and they discover the body of the Nagitsune in there, and they pull out a picture, which we find out is, you know, in the next episode will play a prominent role, so that's interesting. But before they can do anything, Oliver shows up and tasers them. Poor sweet, sweet Oliver.
I mean,
yeah, he's not so sweet.
No. Okay, before the taser, when they're like the body of the Nagitsune, do they mean, like, the body the Nagitsune originally possessed? Because the Nagitsune is not a person. Like, the Nagitsune is in people. So, do they mean, like, the original?
I think so.
Like, because, like, the first host of it? Because, I mean, and the outfit that it's, like, you know, they were talking about trepanning. And so I basically very quickly built this entire theory that it was a patient there maybe in the 50s or something, and that is the era. Maybe that is the era of it that Styles is experiencing. Like, maybe he thinks he's in a tiled cell with wall sconces, and he's actually in, like, a pleasant facility, and he thinks that it's, you know, back in the 50s. You know, you mentioned it seems to be the flying jacket that you mentioned before, and then they pull out the photograph saying, you know, oh, do you recognize anyone in this? And Styles says, yeah, one of them, and, you know, that he has to show it to Scott. And I guess we're assuming that the person he sees in it is Arden, like Arden Cho, because it looks like she's going to be playing the young version of either her mother or her grandmother in a future episode. Maybe all Kitsune
and her mother,
it's her mother.
All Kitsune and the family look the same when they're children or something. And
maybe.
But yeah, so he clearly recognizes a Yukimura who looks just like Kira. And even if it was the child of, you know, say it's this man's child, so the original Gitsune was, say, Kira's grandfather, it's still, I still think that, I was saying before that maybe, like, Kira's older than she knows. Maybe it's not that Kira's older than she knows, but that once you reach an adult as a Kitsune, you don't age so much, because if we're tying all this back to the internment camps and her mother was a child in the internment camps, that means she'd be, like, grandma age now, not, like, lady aged. Like, not, like, you know, no, well, not, like... Not like young, not like young teenager.
Not like mother.
Yeah,
age,
not like not like mother of a young teenager. Like it should be more elderly. And so maybe once Kira is really only been on this earth for 16 years, but once she reaches adulthood, she's going to age more slowly or something. I don't know. Which is something I was tossing around before. But yeah, I mean, is everyone on the same train of thought that that's what is going on with the Nigitsune and the pocket and everything, that you know that person was someone in their family? And then with the trepanning that they kept mentioning and the whole bandages around the head of the Kitsune, you know, is it someone who was in the mental facility when it was more scary and awful and had those treatments done on him maybe to let the Nigitsune out or just in general because they thought he was crazy, drilled holes in his head, and that's why he has the whole bandages thing going on?
I don't know. I mean, there's so much... Like, I have a feeling that a lot of my theory surrounding this is actually coming from footage that we saw in the end of season 3 trailer and in next week's promo. So I'm kind of confused at the moment because when we see the body of the Nigitsune, it has a sword, like it has a katana, and I was under the impression because of the jacket and because of the bandaged man that we see, you know, with the burns covering him in the footage coming up, that that original person would be American, like a white American. And I don't know if those two things necessarily go together, if Malia is maybe putting Styles off the path again or something. I just feel like we don't have enough information yet.
I don't know. Do we think Malia is a malevolent being? Like, do we think that she has bad motivations?
I do.
You guys have convinced me. Like, when this, my original favorite quote was from Malia when she was like, look, I, you know, am a werecoyote that killed my whole family. You can talk to me. I'll understand. I was like, haha, oh, I love Malia. She's kind of spunky and funny and she's cool. And now I'm like, dude, she's evil. Like, well, she's totally evil.
Well, here's the thing. Like, at the end, she just gets to walk out the front door like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And Morale kind of is like, oh, do you know where to find Scott? Kind of thing. Like, it just, it felt like there was something nefarious between her and Morale, and that they had a plan if Styles didn't like shape up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like something, there was something about that. And the fact that her eyes changed when she's not supposed to be able to do that, I highly doubt sex with Styles is gonna make her back into a werecoyote. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like maybe she was in, she wasn't really checked in to the institution. Maybe she was like under cover there in some way, if you know what I mean, like that she was, I don't know, working with Morel in some capacity, or oh god, I don't know. Everything about her being there and then leaving was just insane to me. I was just like,
especially she walks out with that sword, like she has it covered up, but you can tell that's what she's carrying, and I'm assuming she had some of the possessions that was on that body too. Like, how do you walk out of a mental institution with a sword? Like, how did they even get that out up from the basement without being noticed? The whole thing is, yeah, now that you mentioned Morel possibly being in on it, you know, she would have the ability to usher her out the door or hide things for them or something like that. So that does kind of make sense. I don't know. It's, yeah, the whole thing is weird. But basically, what happens down in the basement is, yeah, Oliver shows up. We find out that he's coughing up blood and flies, which we know is a thing that's connected with the Nigitsune because that's what Barrow was doing. And Oliver threatens, you know, The Nagitsune through Oliver threatens to hurt Malia unless Styles lets the Nagitsune back in, and Styles agrees. So we're back to evil Styles, which I think a lot of people are happy about, but also not happy about, which I totally agree with. I mean, come on. But, yeah, and then it kind of switches gears, and we see Deaton, and he's reading the scroll, and he says that in order to stop the Nagitsune, we have to change its body. And he's like, how are we going to do that? And Scott is the one that suggests turning Styles into a werewolf. But do you actually think that's what it means? Or do you, like, are we meant to believe that, yes, this is the actual answer? Or was this Scott just kind of grasping for something that might make sense?
I don't know. It seems like the fact that they've said it as an answer now means like it's not going to be the final answer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it would be, like, it would almost be so sad to have Styles, like, one of the few humans that is truly just human, be changed into a werewolf. I think it would take something away from him. So I would prefer not to see it happen, but at the same, I mean, I understand if that's the way they're going to go, but I personally don't want to see that happen. I'd rather they find a different answer.
Oh, do you think they mean changing the body of, like, putting it into someone else's body? Like, that's kind of what I thought he meant. I mean, not that I didn't already know they were talking about, about the bite, but yeah, I thought they meant,
to somehow pull it into a wolf's body, because the wolf's body could kill it?
Maybe.
That's a possibility. That makes more, I mean, it's a sneaky way to present it, but it makes, you know, it makes sense.
Or maybe instead of, you know, a wolf, because this is Japanese mythology, maybe it really does have something to do with Kira, and, you know, she's going to be the one to fight it off or something. I don't know. That's interesting. But the end of the episode, you know, we have kind of talked about this, but Malia walks out and her eyes change. And what I took away from this, and correct me if you guys think I'm wrong, but is that she never really had trouble switching back and forth. That if her eyes can change at will like that at the end, does that mean that her whole story about not being trapped as a wolf, or even the part about her wanting to change back and not being able to now that she's stuck in her human form, isn't true?
Yeah, I don't think it's true.
I don't think it's true. I think she's been going back and forth and doing nefarious deeds the whole time. Like, she's like an evil child genius.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. Why would Styles let her leave the basement with the knife and the, like, all the things that she walked out the door with and let her go? Maybe why would that even be a possibility?
Maybe evil Styles and Malia are in cahoots together and she's gonna go, like, take out Scott or something. Maybe she wants
that. I mean,
she wants, she wanted regular Styles to believe she wanted help changing. Oh, I know someone who can help you, Scott. She can actually change. Her plan is to get near to Scott so that she can wipe him out.
Yeah, I mean, that would make sense to some extent. Like, that has merit in the whole grand scheme of things, because otherwise I just don't get it. Like, I don't get why she's so easily able to walk out the door away from evil Styles. Like, why would he let her out?
Right.
That's only going to cause more problems. Right, there was something about the look on her face and the eyes flickering that it just...
I want to know how many followers the Nagitsune has, because when Oliver was possessed, he said every Dracula needs a Renfield, which is, I mean, it's not that obscure reference if you're, like, a reader, but it's a bit random and a bit specific. And
it is very specific.
To those who don't really know what that means, in Dracula, in Bram Stoker's Dracula, Renfield was, like, sort of like a fanboy of the vampire and a human basically minion, and who sort of wanted to, you know, or like an alkalite, like a follower of the vampire, and the actual mental illness where people are obsessed with drinking blood, not like goths who like try to do it for fun, the thing where people actually believe they're a vampire in the same way that there is the werewolf issue that we've addressed before, where people believe that, is called Renfield syndrome. And So I'm wondering how many Renfields there are, like how many people follow the Nogitsune, whether by will or because he sort of forces them to. You know, whether it's all comes out of this Eiken House place, like whether it, you know, was because that's where I guess the first one died, and then there was Barrow, and as we mentioned, he was put there after he killed everyone, but I think he, or at least that's what they implied, I think he was there before he killed people as well, because that's where he would have gotten, you know, sucked in by the Nogitsune, potentially. And then Oliver, and possibly Malia. Like, I think that, you know, I don't think she's like a fly coffer-upper or anything. I think that she's, sorry, I think
she's a whole, she's on a different level.
Yeah, I think she's not that kind of mitten, but she's like a partner in cahoots now, like whether it's because they have the same goals and or because she is still influenced in some way. But I think she's like a level above base minion. Yeah, I just found that, especially for a show that's tried to avoid vampire stuff, like I found that reference kind of weird.
I looked up Renfield too because I'm sorry, but I haven't read Dracula. It's on my to-do list. But there's also a lot of things with him and flies too, right?
And he was also a patient in an asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's I don't know if it's
weirdly specific. Like,
yeah, maybe I don't know if it's like, oh well, this is, you know, a good reference to make because it applies so much, or if it's like a clue.
Yeah, maybe like Styles fell asleep reading Dracula and it's one of the other things that like populated his dream, like
God.
It kind of reminds me of like the Wizard of Oz, how she wakes up at the end and everything was a dream, like yeah. the Scarecrow and the Tin Man were like the farm hands from the farm and stuff, and the witch was like the neighbor woman that wanted to kill her dog or whatever. Like, it kind of, just a lot of things in it remind me of, like, Styles' subconscious, like, populating the dream with things that could have been around him. But I don't know. It just seemed really odd to me. And then Malia, the last shot of her we see, she's, like, drugged by Oliver in the basement. And then now she just gets to, like, walk out, like, be like, yeah, I'm cool, I'm wearing my jeans. And she was like, do you know where you're going? And she's like, oh, or, like, do you have anywhere to go? And she's like, no, but I have someone I need to find. What about her father? Does she not live at home with her father, who she was reunited with? Also, if Styles impregnated her with their unprotected couch sex, does that mean Peter Hale is going to be the grandfather of Styles' baby? Like,
oh my God.
Like, there's too many things that I just need not to be true, basically.
Oh, man.
Okay, this is going to sound, like, super out there and ridiculously stupid, I'm sure. But because we have all that information on Renfield, and we don't ever know what Styles' name is, like his first name,
mm-hmm.
What if his first name ended up being something like Renfield? I know that's really stupid, but because it's hidden in plain sight with that comment.
Oh, interesting.
But his name is supposed to be unpronounceable.
Oh, that's...
Sorry. Well, I knew there was. I knew it had to be something. So, no. But there's just something about that I don't know. Because what if? I don't know.
That's a really cool idea, though. I would have liked it to be something like that.
Maybe his name is somewhere else in the episode. God.
Hmm.
Maybe that's what
like,
it is.
Written on something somewhere that we like.
Yeah, that we're not thinking about because it's there. But that would be something that would be hidden in plain sight, that would be easy to kind of overlook because you're not looking at the words or what's on the walls or what is in the images around you.
Yeah, that's... See, it makes me want to watch the episode all over again because I'm like, there's got to be something. But let's move on to our feedback really quick. We only have a couple of pieces, but these are both from Tumblr. The first one I think is from an Anon because we don't have a name to go with it. But somebody is asking, do you guys think that with the apparent flashback episode of Lydia at the dance, we finally get an explanation of where she disappeared to while at the hospital? And what they're talking about is in the end of season three trailer, where we actually do get this flash of Lydia, and she does look like it was after prom and she was dressed up in her clothes and like that. And I don't know
Do you mean necessarily when she originally got bitten by Peter, like after that dance back in the one where her and Styles first, like,
But the thing is, she goes to the hospital and she's in her gown, so I don't know if it would necessarily connect with her, like, being out in the woods after that, because she was in her, like, the hospital gown, not her prom gown, afterwards. But if we're getting a flashback to the dance, that's really interesting, and I think, you know, there could be something really significant there.
I'm just trying to piece together what any and all of these things could be. Do you know, like, it's so...
There are a lot of pieces. Yeah.
So, okay, so to go back, when they had Peter and Derek hostage, or when Peter has Lydia look for the message is that Peter has a daughter, correct?
Yeah, or a child. Right. And then
a child.
And then Lydia and Allison, after they leave, they tell Peter that they don't know who it is, just that it happened. And then they go and do a thing, and they sort of talk about it being Malia, but again, we don't know if it's for a fact that it's Malia.
Okay, but how would Malia be a were-coyote? Would that work?
Okay,
see, so here's my thing.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Peter, well, Peter bit Lydia, and while she never fully became a wolf, what if there's something about her that makes her, do you know what I mean?
Well,
because she's a banshee. I mean, she's all kinds of complicated, but he did bite her.
Yeah.
There is still that element where he bit her.
What we've sort of discussed is that maybe the bite or the werewolf gene, whether it's you're born with it or you get bitten, is that it's a Kickstarter for the supernatural, not necessarily a werewolf, if you know what I mean. Like it made Jackson the Canimer, and then when that was healed, he became a proper werewolf. The thing about Malia being a werecoyote, I mean, she also says in this episode that she killed her mother and sister. It wasn't just that they had a crash because they were shocked that she started changing, that she thinks that she killed them. A couple of theories: that her mother was a were-coyote, and that her father was Peter, a werewolf, and they had a baby and it turned out to be a were-coyote. We don't know whether that mother was the same mother that died in the crash, or whether she was adopted by that complete family, like whether the dad and the mum, or that her mother was normal and that her dad was Peter and was a werewolf, but because when she first started to change, she basically went crazy and killed everyone, she went off into the woods and was surrounded by coyotes, and, like, she was sort of imbibed by their spirit in some way. Like, she became what she saw and was around rather than became the natural. And it was more animalistic because she was so traumatized or whatever. Like, we don't know whether a were-coyote is actually different from a werewolf, or if it's the thing like Jackson becoming the Canimer, where it is just a different influence of the same bite, if you know what I mean.
But no, I got it. Yeah,
we don't even know if Peter's definitely her dad. Again, we don't know whether it's that Lydia knows that for a fact, or whether she made an assumption because of something she saw, and that the assumption is wrong. Like, we don't know if it's definitely true. So,
because see, the flashbacks would make sense if it were Lydia in some way, shape, or form. Do you know what I mean? Like, that would be a connection there for those two pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know what's going on. Our second piece of feedback actually ties a bit into this too, because I Don't Have an Ego from Tumblr says, is it only me, or in the mid-season promo when Derek gets shot, does it look a bit like a lunar eclipse behind the window? Maybe it's from a hallucination or nightmare Derek is having because of the Nagitsune. During a lunar eclipse, he's vulnerable and can be killed, so maybe that's just an image of his biggest fear. There's more to that theme in the newest 3B mid-season promo. For example, Lydia, who appears to be wearing the same clothes she was wearing the night when Peter bit her. I went back and I looked at the footage. I don't necessarily think it looks like a lunar eclipse, but I do kind of like this idea of hallucinations and nightmares coming from the Nagitsune, because I think a lot of Lydia's trauma does stem from that part where she was bitten by Peter. And I think Derek being vulnerable and maybe not being able to help people would make sense with his character too. So I don't know, because in the upcoming promos, the Nagitsune does look like it's influencing a lot of other people.
If Derek is really going to die, I don't think they'd show it in the promo. So
yeah, that's our general right. consensus.
It's going to be something a whole lot different.
Yeah.
A little more in your face and not expecting it kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the finale episode's called The Divine Move, and that's basically something that completely comes out of left field, so I'm expecting a huge twist at the end.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting.
I think fandom kind of knows about this, but I don't know if we've talked about it on the show. The Divine Move is a move, like a chess move, in this Asian game called Go, which is insanely popular, so presumably it's going to be, like Karen said, something completely out of left field that's going to wipe everything else off the board. So maybe it's like Lost, not that I've seen Lost, and it's going to be like that they were all like in heaven the whole time or something. But, you know.
Styles was asleep from the very beginning.
Yeah, he fell asleep with Ingram. Karen, yeah. I would put money on that being it.
I've said that
since the start of the season. Yeah. I hope it's not that, but I kind of wouldn't be that shocked.
Could it be that they're still, you know how they were in the bathtubs and they went and did that whole thing? Could they still somehow be in that realm?
Maybe this is the 16 hours.
Yes.
Oh my God.
See? I'm here for a reason.
No. Dude, I totally asked you on this episode because I knew that you would be perfect for this whole, like, mental institution part. I know my stuff.
I'm really not sure that's a compliment.
I know my friend.
For the mental
institution. It's a compliment. I swear. Because I knew you study, like, psychology and stuff. I was like, Jen's going to be perfect. So, yeah. Okay, let's wrap this up with our non-sequitur question. Should be a fairly easy one, I think. Basically, I'm asking, what's a popular book or movie that, quote-unquote, everyone has seen or read that you haven't? And this is sort of in the vein of, like, Scott never having seen Star Wars. And, Jen, why don't you go first?
I don't know if I have one.
Oh, come on.
I'm trying to think,
like, of the super popular stuff like Star Wars and Indiana Jones and all that stuff. I've seen all of that.
And I wouldn't ask about books because you've read everything.
I read a lot, but like some of the more classic stuff I haven't read as much of. So I'm trying to think of one. I don't know. I'm on the spot. I don't have an answer.
Okay, Nat, you go. And then
I'll try and think of something.
Books. I mean, I've read a lot of books, I suppose. I guess the biggest ones, they're not like fandom type books. Like, you know, I've obviously read Harry Potter and Hunger Games and all of that. But like Pride and Prejudice, I haven't read any of the Jane Austen books in full. I started Pride and Prejudice when I was on holidays last year and didn't finish it. It was kind of my aim this year to read all of the Jane Austen books, though, so perhaps I'll do that on the plane on the way to America. Movies, I haven't seen Star Wars. I've seen two of the reboot, like the first two of the that came out in like the late 90s, but I haven't seen the original series Star Wars.
Don't watch those ever again.
No, I'm not a fan of what I know about Star Wars. I've seen bits and pieces, and I'm not a huge fan of what I know, but I have not sat and watched them all, or Indiana Jones. I've seen like the first Indiana Jones, but not all of them. So,
I actually really like Indiana Jones. Yeah. Star Wars, like, I just watched Star Wars for the first time last year, so that's not on my list anymore. That was sort of my claim to fame, but now I've watched it. I still have to watch the reboot once, though. I do want to just to kind of see where it goes. But my big thing that I haven't read is Lord of the Rings. And I don't know if I really want to. Like, I know that it's super popular and, like, Marima, she already hates it.
I was going to say, I'm like, do not tell Marima.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she knows. But it's weird because, like, I watched the first movie and it scared the crap out of me. And I think it's kind of put me off the whole thing.
Have you not seen the other movies, Karen?
No, I have. I actually have. And I didn't particularly enjoy them. So I think that's why I'm not in a hurry to read the book.
I've read the first two Lord of the Rings books, and I sort of stopped after that, but I've seen the movies. I do like the movies. I do not like The Hobbit, what they've done with The Hobbit so far. I find it really odd. and really not like the book, but I like the original, the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy. The books are exceedingly dry and they are quite difficult to get through, honestly. Like, it's kind of like you start those and then, like, you look at, say, like, George R. R. Martin and you're like, oh my god, those are gigantic fantasy books. I'm never going to get through them. George R. R. Martin are like chick lit with like dragons, like not in a bad way, because all the characters are so well written. It's so easy to read. It's like the dialogue, the way the text is laid out, it's so easy to get through. Whereas Lord of the Rings is so dry and like not that readable. Like it's not that much of a quick read. Whereas I found all of the Song of Ice and Fire books a really quick read despite their size. I don't know, different strokes for different folks, I suppose.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, Jen, what's your answer?
I've not seen the Godfather movies.
Oh, neither.
Sir, yeah.
Okay, well, that's, I was like, I just Googled like the most popular like film franchises. I'm like, okay, let me go through them. So I've not seen those, which is kind of like they're classics in that sense.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For me, that's what I haven't seen.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, Natalie, you want to lead us out?
Oh, I suppose. Okay, with that large gap in our entertainment industry knowledge, I suppose we will finish up now and you can tell us if the things that we've mentioned are worth watching or the things that you haven't seen that everyone's seen. I assume everyone has seen Harry Potter and The Hunger Games and Twilight, given that they're the kind of the biggest things of the current fandom generation, but as far as other things go, yeah, we have not seen them. But we'll wrap up now and go. Next week's episode is titled The Fox and the Wolf, and we should be getting more information about the World War II internment camps and how that ties into everything, finally. I want to thank Jen for joining us. It was very productive to have you on with your Mental Institute knowledge.
Thank you. I had a really good time.
genuine question. I mean, how did you feel about like the mental health treatment in this episode and what the institution was like? Was any aspect of that like plausible in any way?
No.
So
no, not for now. It's definitely retro.
Yeah.
Like in the 50s, sure. That was probably the norm.
Yeah.
But not in today's day and age. Absolutely not.
Yeah. And does that make you definitely think that things are not
It just seems really unrealistic and like a caricature. So yeah. It just added to that dreamlike quality, like, or nightmare-like quality. Mm. That's another reason, like you said earlier when you pointed out, that it's not typical for them to be so off base with something.
Yeah.
So it just kind of led to the idea that this was all kind of a weird place for them to be at, and it's not really accurate because it's not real to them.
Yeah.
But it's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like someone's own internal like horror idea of what it would be like in
It's like a horror caricature of what a mental institution is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And yeah, because this show doesn't usually do such things, I think we're all a bit confused about that. So anyway. So yeah, but thank you anyway for coming and giving that insight, and
no.
I guess we'll see you soon. I shall speak with Karen next week and our next special guest, and we shall catch up with Jen when we come to Los Angeles, I believe.
Yeah, I will be in Los Angeles when you guys are there, so that'll be really fun.
Cool. Yay. So yeah, for now we'll all say bye, I suppose. So bye-bye.
Bye guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you. It's not. Sorry, I don't know why I'm coughing.
Don't cough up flies or I'm going to freak out.
Oh my god, I have something about that. Hold on.
Oh, lovely.
Just in the next point, remind me about the flies if I forget. I'm not coughing up flies.